Hello, this is Derek Frost from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading to you from the Triangle Business Journal. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. And we start on the front page of the Triangle Business Journal. The headline across the top of the page, Local Grads Finding Open Arms at PRA. And this article is written by Amanda Jones Hoyle with a Dateline of Raleigh. And next to the article on the far right side, there's a picture of the outside of a building. The caption reads, PRA has outgrown its space at Glen Lake. PRA International, a relative newcomer to the Triangle's robust clinical research industry, already is making an aggressive move for the region's next generation of scientists, newly minted college graduates. Over the past 6 months, PRA has nearly doubled its staff at Raleigh's Glen Lake Office Park, and it now stands at 435 employees. That comes close to fulfilling the minimum job requirement to receive state incentives valued at $7.6 million, awarded in 2007 to move its headquarters from Virginia to Raleigh. The company, headed by Colin Shannon, who has been the CEO for about 2 years, occupies about 85,000 square feet at Glen Lake, and PRA recently signed a deal to take another 29,000 square feet in the 3737 Glenwood Avenue office building that's about 2 miles away, confirms John Hogan of Highwoods Properties, owner of PRA's office buildings. One of the reasons PRA moved to Raleigh, executives have said, was to be closer to a larger worker talent pool for the clinical research it conducts on behalf of pharmaceutical and biotech firms around the world. Three of the largest clinical research organizations, or CROs, in the world, Quintiles, PPD, and Inc. Research, are based in North Carolina, making the state a hotspot for the CRO industry. Most of the PRA's more recent hires have come through an introductory program that PRA executives called PROGRAM, or Preparing for Research Advancement, that reaches out to recent college graduates interested in clinical research. Steve Powell, Senior Vice President of Clinical Informatics and Late Phase Services for the company, says PRA has filled more than 100 of its new positions in Raleigh with new graduates of local universities. We knew coming here there was a huge potential to find trained staff here, he says, referring to experienced workers looking for new opportunities. But in the short term, we've been finding a lot of people from the university programs. The program has already graduated two classes of 40 students each, and each graduate is offered the opportunity to apply for a job within the company. In years past, PRA has grown its operations mostly through acquisitions, but since moving to Raleigh, Powell says almost all of the company's growth has been organic in terms of both revenue and employees. PRA's growth over the past year is not surprising, considering a pickup in business in the CRO industry as a whole, says Neil McCarthy, managing director of investment banking firm Fairmount Partners in Philadelphia. The market has gotten a bit more friendly, he says. Research has always grown, but what happens is a lot of big pharmaceuticals have been cutting their research staff and sending more money to CROs. It's been slower growth in pharmaceutical R&D, but there's a lot more outsourcing going on. PRA employs another 115 workers across North Carolina, with a global count of 4,700 people in about 85 countries. Powell would not disclose details about the company's revenue, since it is a private company owned by the Genstar Capital private equity firm in San Francisco. Industry observers estimate the company had revenue of around $500 million in 2011, which was up from $400 million in 2010. Talk surfaced last summer that Genstar, which acquired PRA in 2007 for $790 million, was shopping PRA around to other potential investors for a sale and that the company could be valued at around $1 billion. No deal ever materialized. Powell notes that there's always an opportunity for change in ownership, but right now, he says, that's not really in play. And now we move to the center of the first page, and there's a large article, has a black border around it. Inside that border, the top third is a picture of three men casually dressed walking down the hallway of an office building. The caption reads, Red Hat's Jim Whitehurst is with General Counsel Michael Cunningham and CFO Charlie Peters. And then under that, there's the headline in bold black lettering, The RPE Factor, data show companies increasing revenue with fewer employees. And this article was written by Chris Bagley with the Dateline of Chapel Hill. And then underneath the article, there's a graph showing or titled Doing More with Less. And it goes company by company showing how they've done more with less, making more money per employee. And those numbers will be discussed in the article. The Great Recession has resulted in the loss of hundreds of thousands of jobs, but that sad development has made companies stronger. An analysis of some of the largest and most prominent publicly traded companies in the Triangle that collectively employ thousands of people here and elsewhere reveal a year-over-year increase in revenue per employee, or RPE, strong evidence that companies are doing more with less. The national narrative that the economic recovery will be slow and deliberate is playing out through the year while growing their workforce by just 1.6%. That resulted in the revenue per employee number rising from $553,000 in 2010 to $564,000 last year collectively for 14 companies. We're not always striving to become more efficient, says Liz Cernak, chief commercial officer at Posen, a Chapel Hill pharmaceutical company. Posen grew by just 2 employees last year to 32. Meanwhile, its annual revenue surged by 27% to $87 million. Among the company financials analyzed for this report, collective revenue hit $24.6 billion in 2011. Those companies employed a total of about 43,600 people at the end of the year. While revenue per employee varies enormously from one industry to the next, it grew strongly almost across the board, rising at 11 companies, falling at 3, and staying virtually unchanged at 1. In terms of profit, the trend is clear. The Triangle Area Company's collective net income grew by just 1.6% to $1.36 billion, leaving most of them slightly less profitable on a per-employee basis. And those numbers exclude Dex One, whose bankruptcy involved several very large accounting adjustments. On the national level, employees' productivity grew by about 0.4% in 2011, following a 4% gain in 2010, according to the U.S. Labor Department. Last year's 0.4% gain reflected a 2.4% increase in output and a 2% increase in hours worked. Nevertheless, the RPE results suggest executives believe there's a modest economic recovery, but their confidence that this growth will continue is tepid. The results also reflect nationwide data showing that businesses are becoming more efficient and that individual employees are doing more work. In the Triangle, the strongest RPE gains were at the digital marketing company Dex One, Salix Pharmaceuticals, and Posen. Cary-based Dex One emerged from bankruptcy early last year with a new business plan. It took in about $550,000 in revenue per employee compared with $310,000 in 2010. A good gain also was posted by open-source software company Red Hat Incorporated, which hired at a 15% clip in the fiscal year through February 28, 2011, while boosting revenue by 21% to $773 million. Red Hat's RPE rose by 5% to $207,000. On the negative side of the ledger, Progress Energy Incorporated's annual revenue fell by 11% last year to $8.9 billion, due largely to weather that was milder than in 2010. The company's headcount shrunk by just a couple hundred to about 10,600, spokesman Mike Hughes says. Its RPE fell by 11% in 2011 compared to 2010. Among the tumultuous banking industry, revenue outgrew headcount at First Citizens BancShares Incorporated and Crescent Financial BancShares Incorporated. Banking consultant Don Coker says the improving economy is slowly allowing banks to shift employees from fixing problem loans to negotiating new ones without necessarily hiring a lot more people. In really good times, they generally sit there originating loans all day, Coker says. Working on problem loans is not going to bring in any revenue. And we have one last article on the front page of the Triangle Business Journal. This one runs vertically along the right side of the page. The headline, Startups Look to Monetize Ideas. And this article is written by Lauren K. Onsorge with a Dateline of Durham. And underneath the article, there's a picture of a man wearing a suit and tie, holding what looks like to be a skeleton, looks like a what you would see a skeleton of a spinal column. The caption reads, David Smitherman, CEO of Wake Forest startup Orthovative Technologies, wants to raise $300,000. Walking through the renovated century-old tobacco warehouse in Durham, one could sense the irony of hosting scores of startups trying to change the world by reshaping the way people live, work, and play. Startup Madness offered these young entrepreneurs a platform to showcase their products and services. In return, they hoped to bag the top prize of the event, $5,000 each, for two startups. We're trying to reward that entrepreneurial spirit, says Max Q Ventures, Scott Kelly, adding that the money can go a long way where a small company is concerned. But not long enough. Teams from college startups facing off in competition at the American Tobacco Campus say the title and cash combo wasn't the prize. The real goal for most companies was exposure and larger investment opportunities that exposure can bring. The number of jobs a company creates is, as Duke University startup Tim Bodie, .com, which is spelled T-I-M-B-O-D-I.com, CEO Fernando Trueba says, directly related to how much capital it can raise. We can't work for free, he says, adding that his company needs $250,000 to launch and hire employees. Without partners, he won't be able to take his website, a social platform for players and coaches of youth soccer, from beta to reality. TG, spelled T-E-E-G-E-E, a University of Virginia toy company creating what its president, Tom Gledgaud, hopes is the next Furby, came out of Gledgaud's need to find a toy his children wouldn't outgrow. By utilizing iPhone technology, Gledgaud hopes TG will grow with children. Currently, TG employs 5 people, but with funding, that will increase. Call for funding. Wake Forest University startup Orthovative Technologies CEO David Smitherman is already looking ahead with plans to raise $300,000 by July to pay for a full-time researcher. Its product, a posture monitoring device, already hopes to net a $189,500 grant from the National Institutes of Health and expects to raise the money through competitions such as Startup Madness. Without such opportunities, Smitherman says he'd be forced to explore venture capital options sooner. Crowd favorite Trad Cotter of Clemson University startup Mushroom Mountain makes beer out of mushrooms. Additionally, he has discovered pest control uses for his fungi, and he hopes to find a partner to help take the product to market. Though his company is already generating revenue of about $100,000 a year, expanded lab space is going to require more capital. In addition to exposure from investors, the networking itself was valuable to Florida State University startup energy efficiency company Less, Matt Turnup says. It's a great opportunity to see what people are doing, he says, adding that it's good practice for presenting to future investors. NC State University startup Offline aims to get young professionals off their computers and into direct networking situations, and one of its founders, David Shaner, says his company isn't just looking for cash, it's looking for culture. Shaner just returned from Silicon Valley, a place where it's easy to find an entrepreneurship community, he says. Out here, things are more spaced out, he says, harder to find. Job creation. That's consistent with what CED Director Catherine James has heard, but events such as Startup Madness can help change Triangle culture. The more you see there's a lot going on, the more people will feel it's time to jump in and start investing, James says. Additionally, she's seeing angels who were wiped out during the dot-com flameout beginning to return. She sees a direct correlation between startups and job growth. According to CED's own research released in January, more than 1,800 startups have created 40,000-plus jobs in North Carolina in the past 20 years. But that's not all. It also adds satisfaction to jobs, she says, adding that coming in on the ground floor of an entrepreneurial idea is exciting. Indeed, investors perused the crowd Wednesday. Steve Vanderwood of Madison River Ventures has two local startups, Argyle Social and Spring Metrics, in his investment portfolio. I'm looking at a business idea that addresses a big market with a management team who knows what it's doing, he says, adding that he saw several candidates at Startup Madness. Some startups are further along, including Cohalo, spelled C-O-H-E-A-L-O, a company out of the University of Miami in Florida that networks hospitals so they can share equipment. CEO Mark Slaughter says, thanks to $250,000 already raised, the company is hiring up to 10 people. Slaughter's team took home the overall prize, a $5,000 reward from KeySource Commercial Bank. Duke University startup Neurospire, led by Jake Stotch, took home the North Carolina idea check for $5,000. Kelly hopes the competition inspired more college entrepreneurs. Everyone should be thinking entrepreneurially, he says, adding that ideas are extremely valued in startup companies, no matter your job title, and that's where the jobs are. And now we turn inside the Triangle Business Journal to the Biz column. The headline that starts it off, Lens Man Finds G-Men Lurking in Carrie Building. Journalistic scoops are hard to come by most of the time. Sometimes they kind of sneak up and bite you. Back in 2009, Durham developer Bruce Knott and a group of investors built an attractive 25,000-square-foot building in the Corsdale office park in Cary near the intersection of US 1 and Cary Parkway. When a photographer was out there recently trying out a new digital camera, a security officer promptly told him not to take any photos of the building. Come to find out, the building is fully leased to the Federal Bureau of Investigation. Yes, as in FBI. The property recently sold for $9 million to a Chicago investment group that does a lot of work with the General Services Administration, the federal government's primary landlord agency. Drugstore giant Walgreens must love the Triangle market. The pharmacy retailer, which already has 33 locations here, opened new stores in Apex and near Briar Creek and West Raleigh in January. Another store is under construction at the intersection of Millbrook and Creedmoor Roads in North Raleigh, an outparcel at a shopping center that houses a Rite Aid. A gas station was torn down to make way for the Walgreens. Real estate sources say developers are negotiating to buy a building anchored by Starbucks near the intersection of Falls of Neuse and Spring Forest Roads for a Walgreens. Starbucks has signed a deal to expand across the street in the old Woody's Barbecue building. For the second year in a row, North Carolina State University has been recognized as having one of the top undergraduate programs in video game development by the Princeton Review. The review chose schools based on a survey of administrators at 150 institutions offering game design coursework and/or degrees. It's a reflection of the impact that our graduates are having at leading games companies like Epic Games and Red Storm Entertainment, says R. Michael Young, co-director of the Digital Game Research Center at NC State. Biz never was a sports photographer, but always enjoys looking at some of the best shots in Sports Illustrated. Campbell University graduate Will Bratton can now add his name to the list of photojournalists to have a picture published in the magazine famous for its large photos on the first six pages. He did it at age 22. Bratton's photo of a University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill lacrosse player going airborne while wrapped around a player from the University of Detroit was featured in the Leading Off Photo Gallery, a full-page photo of the February 20 issue of SI. Bratton, a 2011 Communications Studies graduate from Littleton, currently works as a freelance sports photographer, shooting mostly UNC sporting events for print publications and for WRAL-TV in Raleigh. He said the night he shot the lacrosse photo, he knew he had a winner on his hands. Before I decided to send it to Sports Illustrated, I emailed it to my dad, Bratton said. It was only February, but I knew then it would be the best photo I'd take all year. As PNC Bank removes the last remnants of RBC Bank across the triangle, folks at Cirque du Soleil will forever be a part of the history of the building that was formerly known as the RBC Center. Cirque was the last show hosted by the RBC Center before becoming PNC Arena. Biz also learns from Cirque publicity folks that the Raleigh stop on March 7 of the troupe's Michael Jackson Immortal show was the 100th performance. Pretty good milestone. PNC signage on the building, in the building, and on the ice was in place when the Carolina Hurricanes hosted the St. Louis Blues on March 15. A nearly $1 million renovation of the 146-room Courtyard by Marriott Hotel at 1815 Front Street near Duke University's campus is complete. The extensive renovations to the hotel, built in 1997, features the chain's new business lobby concept, plus a new fitness center and updated meeting space. On the topic of hotels, the former Hotel Sierra property in Mooresville has completed its transformation into a Hyatt house-branded property after Hyatt Hotels Corporation bought the Hotel Sierra company last year. Hyatt House Raleigh-Durham Airport has launched a housewarming initiative that is part of a 53-day national campaign. Events will include housewarming party favors, including a complimentary hotel handbook written by lifestyle expert Sarah Kate Gilliam Ryan, and tips on how to live more comfortably while traveling. Variety Wholesalers, the parent company of the Roses Discount Store chain that's owned by the Art Pope family of Raleigh, is planning to open a new store this summer in New Bern. The Henderson-based company has signed a 58,000-square-foot lease at the Furniture Fair Shopping Center in New Bern. A couple of local residential real estate offices are relocating to new parts of town and bringing new innovation as well. Prudential York Simpson Underwood is moving its office on Kildare Farm Road in Cary to the new Park West Village Shopping Center in Mooresville, which will feature a new design targeted to clients and agents that are much more mobile than in the past, says Player Murray, branch sales manager for the new Park West Village office. Murray says studies show that 75 to 80% of workspaces for agents are often unoccupied at any given time. So, the new office includes a coffee bar, wireless internet service, and an advanced phone system that allows agents to sync desktop phones with their mobile or home phones. The Capital City Real Estate Group at Briar Creek in Raleigh, led by Mark Eierfreight, is also moving its office closer into Raleigh. Eierfreight says the new office will be at 4801 Glenwood Avenue, which is across the street from Crabtree Valley Mall. Apptio, a Seattle-based business management software company, decided last October to expand with a new Center of Excellence office in the Triangle that would be led by Doug Pytek. Less than 6 months later, Apptio is already moving out of its executive suite office at Meridian Business Park in Durham and into 8,500 square feet of space at Center Green Office Park in Cary, says Don Shoup, a broker with CPRE in Raleigh, who along with Heath Chapman represented Apptio in the lease deal. Shoup says Apptio's local operations have already grown from about 4 people when they moved into Meridian to more than 30 people at their new space in Cary. Ooh la la, Biz would never turn down a French dinner. 5 culinary arts students from Wake Technical Community College will take a 2-week trip to La Tourque, France, to study French cuisine at a culinary school and learn the ropes in French restaurants. The students will study at L'Estetade Hôtel de Decoux and attend seminars and tastings, as well as work with chefs at area hotels. The Rita's Italian Ice franchise group, which has 5 locations in the Triangle, will be celebrating the first day of spring on March 20 by giving away a free regular Italian Ice treat to each customer that day. What started out as a seasonal reopening for many of Rita's stores across the country each year has turned into an annual free ice day for fans of the frozen treat. Contributing to Biz were staffers Amanda Jones-Hoyle and Jason DeBrun. And now we return to some of the full-length articles in the Triangle Business Journal. The first one has the headline, Firm Cutting Space, Merger Talk in the Air. Legal sector insiders view a marriage between Williams Mullen, Pointer Spruill making sense. This article is written by Chris Bagley with a Dateline of Raleigh. As one of the Triangle's largest law firms downsizes its physical footprint, talk is bubbling that the recession-battered local legal sector could be on the precipice of a round of consolidation. Williams Mullen is looking to sublease part or all of the 15th floor in the PNC Bank building on Fayetteville Street in downtown Raleigh, according to notices it sent out through commercial real estate brokers. Like most large firms in the Triangle, Williams Mullen's local headcount has shrunk from pre-recession peaks. It now has 45 lawyers in Raleigh and 5 in Research Triangle Park, compared to a total of 61 in mid-2009. The growth we thought we would have hasn't been there, says managing partner Keith Kapp. Even as it shrinks its local office space, Richmond-based Williams Mullen is scouting for new markets to expand. It already has offices throughout Virginia, one in Washington, D.C., and one in Wilmington. Kapp says the firm is interested in Charlotte, but wouldn't say whether it's pursuing a merger as a way to get into the Queen City market. Several people in the Triangle's legal community, including some close to the situation, say a Williams Mullen merger with Raleigh-based Pointer Spruill would be a logical combination. Pointer has 29 attorneys in Charlotte, and it occupies the 2 floors just above Williams Mullen in the PNC Bank building, where it has about 70 attorneys. Kapp and his counterpart at Pointer, Bo Dempster, wouldn't say whether the two firms have discussed a potential merger, but both say they're in talks with several potential partners, and Dempster says he has had multiple conversations with a couple of firms since last summer. In general, firms' merger discussions are much more common today than I've ever seen, Dempster says. Raleigh just seems to be on everybody's radar. Kapp says he could foresee a merger in the next couple of years, but not imminently. It just has to be the right fit. There's nothing to talk about in that range at this point. Altman Weil, a Pennsylvania-based consulting firm that advises law firms on business and merger technology, counted 60 mergers among U.S. firms in 2011 and foresees more in 2012. We think the trend toward larger deals will continue and the pace of mergers could accelerate in 2012, Altman Weil principal Ward Bauer says. As for William Mullen's downtown space, the firm's administrative and training functions are there, along with more than 9,000 square feet of unused space, says Kapp. The firm might rent out just the unused space or, if the price is right, the entire floor, Kapp says. The offices would be consolidated onto the 16th and 17th floors, which the firm also leases, and the training sessions would take place in a 17th floor conference room, Kapp says. Each floor has about 25,000 square feet of space. Richmond-based Williams Mullen committed to the 3 floors in 2008 before the effects of the Great Recession were clear and has occupied them since 2009. The firm's lease on the 3 floors runs to 2024. And our next article is in the center of page 3, has a black border around it. Inside that border, the top third, is a picture of a man sitting in a shoe store. He has a lot of flip-flops hanging on the wall behind him, and he's holding one, casually dressed. The caption reads, Mark Saad ended up with a 28% stake in merged company. And then under that, the headline in bold black lettering, If the shoe fits, dot, dot, dot. Entrepreneurs join forces with sustainable footwear. And this article is written by Jason DeBrun with a Dateline of Raleigh. Sometimes things just click. It's true of couples who fall in love at first sight, and it's true of business partners who know their businesses are just suited for each other. That, more or less, is how Mark Saad and Kyle Berner felt about each other when they sat down for a beer at the Raleigh Times Bar, literally around the corner in downtown Raleigh, from where they would end up buying space for a design studio and storefront for their flip-flop and footwear company. We just absolutely hit it off, says Saad, who met Berner in September and now plans to open the new studio this month. Through his company, Kinder Souls, Soles spelled S-O-L-E-S. Saad made flip-flops out of recycled materials such as plastic water bottles. He was named a Triangle Business Journal 40 Under 40 Award recipient in 2011, but at about $40,000 a year, his sales were small. Meanwhile, in New Orleans, Berner was making eco-friendly footwear through his company, Feel Goods, with a Z on the end, that are completely biodegradable. You can literally throw them in the woods when you're done with them, Saad says. At $400,000 in sales, his company was considerably larger than Saad's, but not nearly as big as he wanted it to be. The first step in Berner's plan toward growth was to design an entirely new line of flip-flops. But if you think this is where Saad comes in, you're too early in the story. Berner had heard of a designer named Lizzie Gonzalez, who was a footwear designer for Quiksilver Incorporated and its apparel brand Roxy, before leaving the company and moving to Raleigh. Gonzalez was aware of Kinder Souls, but didn't know Saad very well. When Berner contacted Gonzalez, she recommended the three of them get together to talk. Both Saad and Berner agreed. It's not every day you meet another flip-flop entrepreneur, they both said in separate interviews. After dinner, at Mez in Durham, and a few beers at the Raleigh Times, the three decided to go into business together. Feel Goods acquired Kinder Souls. Saad took 28% equity in Feel Goods, and came aboard as chief financial officer. Gonzalez is the chief designer, and Berner the chief executive. Remaining from Saad's company is the Kinder's line of flip-flops available through Feel Goods. Saad and Berner say they complement each other well. Saad works the books and finances well, but was never strong in marketing. Berner is just the opposite. The company maintains its headquarters in New Orleans, but Berner moved to Raleigh and the company leased space on Wilmington Street, just south of Harget Street, as a design studio. Since it already was zoned for commercial use, they plan to sell footwear there as well. They hope to hit $1 million in sales this year, and Berner wants to grow to as much as $50 million in 5 to 7 years. It's ambitious, he says, but I think we can hit that. Their footwear is sold mainly in Whole Foods markets, though Berner is working on deals that would get the Feel Goods product in Urban Outfitters, REI, and similar stores. They are also expanding internationally, hoping to get their product in as many as a half dozen countries. Paul Remmel, economic development manager for Downtown Raleigh Allowance, sees Feel Goods as a good addition to the downtown scene. Typically, the downtown's in the middle of a comeback, see restaurants, bars, and cafes spring up first, with storefronts and retail following, he says. Raleigh is moving into that second phase. In the past year, we have seen some clothing boutiques open, which is exciting, he says. Some 3 million people will visit downtown this year, Rymel estimates, and at the end of January, the 110-block Business Improvement District was home to 33 bars or nightclubs, 120 restaurants or cafes, and 179 retailers. We are definitely seeing some good momentum here in the retail market, he says. In our next article is written by Jason DeBrun with the Dateline of Durham. The headline, Study, Campus in China to Cost Duke Millions. Updated projections for Duke University's controversial campus in China reveal it probably will lose $76.8 million in the first 7 years of operation and could lose as much as $102 million during that time. Because the project, called Duke Kunshan University, is a partnership among Duke, the city of Kunshan, and Wuhan University in China, a Duke subsidy to make up for the loss would come to only 50%. Citing financial projection models, Duke officials say they are 80% certain that Duke's portion of the subsidy would fall between $31.9 million and $48.7 million for the 7 years. The chance of it reaching the higher level is 10%. Those numbers could fluctuate depending on actual enrollment. Duke's goal for DKU is to confer Duke degrees to Chinese students studying in Kunshan, but a Duke-commissioned report by China Market Research Group concludes there would not be a big appetite for such a program, especially because many Chinese students would rather study abroad, preferring to travel to Durham to earn a Duke degree than stay in China. In projections, Duke shows enrollment increasing from 130 entering students in the first year to 530 entering by year five, for a total of 1,725 students in that time frame. However, only one program has received approval, and the enrollment projections include three other programs, one of which, an executive MBA program, is listed only as potential. Still, DKU is slowly gaining some support for specific programs. The Duke Academic Council has approved a proposal by the Fuqua School of Business to offer its Master's of Management Studies program in China. The council also supports Fuqua's goal of using the facilities in Kunshan to enhance its global executive MBA and cross-continent programs, though the faculty has not yet committed to any full-fledged programs. While she was clear to point out that the academic council in no way supports DKU in its entirety, council chairwoman Susan Lozier says it would be folly to acknowledge only the concerns about DKU in the same way it would be folly to acknowledge only the opportunities. Also, faculty have not expressed as much concern over an academic subsidy. Instead, as they have for months, faculty express lingering concerns about academic and other freedoms of educating and researching in China. Bernd Mueller, a professor of physics, specifically wonders about precautions to ensure that students know their freedoms of thought are protected. In response, Duke President Richard Broadhead says that values of free speech and open inquiry are central values of Western education, and when we go to China, we don't intend to leave our principles at home. Additionally, and more specifically, Jennifer Francis, the Senior Associate Dean of the Fuqua School of Business, says Duke plans to have key administrators in residency in Kunshan during the academic year. New airport director wants to hike technology spending. That's the headline on our next article, written by Chris Bagley with a Dateline of Morrisville. Raleigh-Durham International Airport's new director has proposed a 5% increase in spending in the coming fiscal year, with the main goal of improving information technology. It's the first budget presented by Michael Langeth, who projects the boost in spending to be offset primarily by a higher take in parking fees. Langeth is asking the airport's governing board to approve an operating budget of about $50.6 million for the year that begins April 1, compared to the current year's budget of about $48.3 million. A large chunk of the increased spending is to cover five new in-house IT job positions and $370,000 in new spending on contracted technology services, according to the budget and an accompanying letter from Langeth. Langeth and board members wouldn't comment on the proposal until the board has had a chance to review it. RDU spokeswoman Mindy Hamlin says some of the additional IT spending would cover a system for displaying flight data. About $60,000 in additional spending would fund technical and professional development for airport employees, a move Langeth calls in his budget message a strategic investment decision to invest in our employees' skill development. All told, Langeth is asking for 10 new positions and proposes to eliminate three positions, bringing the airport's headcount up to 289 from 282. The airport expects revenue to grow by about 5%, from $90.6 million to about $95.1 million, driven largely by an expected $4 million increase in parking revenue. The airport recently raised its maximum daily parking rate to $12 from $10. With an eye on airlines' recent reductions in capacity, RDU managers expect income from landing fees to shrink by about 3% to $11.3 million. The operating budget foresees a $44.5 million surplus, roughly half of which is expected to help fund the capital budget. Large portions of operating budget surpluses also help cover debt obligations and several other items. Bob Mann, a consultant who works with airlines, says many airports have been spending more on information technology, as Langeth proposes to do. One common goal for an airport is to track and analyze passenger numbers more exactly so that the airport can schedule its employees during the busiest periods. Another goal is often to collect and analyze data on airport operations and communicate it to nearby residents. An airport can then respond more effectively with data on airplanes' takeoffs and landings when a neighbor living near a flight path complains about noise, for example. It's about improved transparency, Mann says. The Federal Aviation Administration has also been pouring money into information technology with the goal of improving efficiency and safety and reducing overall cost, FAA spokeswoman Kathleen Berger says. The federal government appropriated about $700 million a year for a next-generation satellite-based system for air traffic control between 2007 and 2011. That annual outlay will probably rise to at least $1.4 billion over the next 14 years, Bergen says. Landguth bases his forecast for landing fees on an estimate that passenger volumes would shrink by about 1% in the coming fiscal year. Most major airlines have cut capacity in the last 5 months as they attempt to curtail the practice of last-minute discounting, which fills seats but undercut profits. The results are already showing up at RDU. Though the 4.6 million passengers who boarded at the airport in 2011 represented slight growth from 2010, numbers for November and December and for January 2012 were below their year-ago levels. Mann says RDU's projection is roughly in line with those of most major airlines, which he says are carrying about 0.5% fewer passengers than a year ago. The notable exception, he says, is JetBlue, which represents just over 5% of RDU's passenger volume. Separately, Landguth expects to spend nearly $23 million on improvements in Terminal 1 next year, the first big portion of a multi-year renovation that's expected to cost about $68 million. That work and other capital projects are expected to draw the airport's cash reserve from about $146 million down to about $138.1 million. Biotech returns disappointing, says Berger. This article is written by Lee Weisbecker with a Dateline of Raleigh. As part of its development mission, the North Carolina Biotechnology Center has invested small sums of cash into nearly every significant venture capital and angel investor fund that sprung up in the Triangle and North Carolina over the past 15 years. The effort may have helped the venture groups get off the ground, but so far, the center has racked up less than a spectacular return, about 74 cents coming back on every dollar invested. Biotech Center officials summarized the status of their venture portfolio in a recent quarterly report to the General Assembly. As of December 31, 2011, the center had committed $2.25 million to 17 VC and angel groups, with 60% of the cash being taxpayer dollars. Of that, $2.02 million actually had been drawn by the funds for investing in startups. Cash returns on the $2.02 million that have flowed back to the center totaled $1.5 million. The news doesn't sit well with Senator Phil Berger, President Pro Tem of the State Senate. "The return note is disappointing," he says. "The continuation of this type of investment by the state is something we're taking a hard look at." Biotech Center Vice President Robin Deakle says the organization looks at its venture portfolio as a small step that can leverage other dollars for the sector. Moreover, she adds, many of the investments remain open. They could still hit for us and return a payout, she says. Venture capital funds collect money from investors and invest it into growing companies in exchange for stock. The investments pay off, sometimes years later, if those startups ultimately are acquired or go public. The Biotech Center portfolio, while not involving overly large sums of money, does provide a window into the operating results of many North Carolina funds. Since the late 1990s, the Biotech Center has invested $925,000 in six separate funds launched by Durham-based InterSouth Partners. Distributions or cash returns back to the center were $984,775. InterSouth's 1998 fund number 4 was the most successful of the six. The Biotech Center paid in $500,000 and got back $754,928. As for the other five InterSouth funds, the center committed $425,000 and as of late 2011 had chalked up cash returns of $218,773. Committed $815,000 into five investment funds of Durham-based Aurora Ventures and Harbinger Aurora Ventures between 1996 and 2005. Cash returns to date were $412,103. Committed $93,500 into four funds of Durham-based Hatteras Venture Partners between 2000 and 2011. Cash returns to date total $50,440. Committed $71,250 into two funds of Raleigh-based Southern Capital Ventures between 2001 and 2005. Cash returns to date are $32,053. In contrast, nationally over the last 5 years, major U.S. venture capital indexes, including Cambridge Associates and the U.S. Venture Capital Early Stage Index, rose by 7.37% and 6.87% respectively, according to Ben Lorica, an analyst with O'Reilly Media. And our next article is written by Lauren K. Onsorge with a Dateline of Chapel Hill. The headline, AstraZeneca Partnership a Nightmare, says Posen CEO. Even as he looks for an outside marketing partner to move forward with a new drug under development, Posen CEO John Plachecka is pulling no punches in blaming giant AstraZeneca for disappointing sales of an approved medicine. Posen formed a partnership in which AstraZeneca was responsible for marketing a Posen drug called Vimovo, spelled V-I-M-O-V-O, which aims to treat arthritis patients sans aspirin-induced ulcers. In a February conference call, Plachecka characterized the partnership as a, quote, nightmare scenario, unquote. He said that during July and August, Posen shareholders lost more than $100 million in enterprise value, taking Posen to share price levels never before seen in our history. Posen's share price fell from $4.46 on July 1, 2011, to $2.83 on August 31, 2011. It's currently trading in the $4.75 range. While Plachecka says that while other factors could have played a role, his earnings call comments make clear where he places the bulk of the blame. AstraZeneca had complete control over both the commercialization strategy and the execution, he said. We had expected better from AstraZeneca here in the U.S. based on their track record with their own products and their stated goal to be the partner of choice for smaller companies. In 2011, of Vimovo's $34 million in global sales, $21 million came from the United States, according to figures released by AstraZeneca. Plachecka says the U.S. number should have been higher, given the 12 million senior arthritic Americans at risk of aspirin-induced ulcers. Posen's first marketing partnership was with GlaxoSmithKline to sell Trexamet, and that relationship led Plachecka to realize the value of such arrangements. Posen next selected AstraZeneca for Vimovo, a drug struggling in the U.S. market. We think the problem is partially because of AstraZeneca's corporate philosophy of pricing, he said. Plachecka thought Vimovo should have been priced at $1 a day. AstraZeneca had a different idea, pricing the drug much higher in the United States, Plachecka says. As for a reaction, Steve Davis, AstraZeneca's executive director of Foundation Brands, said, Together, our primary focus is ensuring that Vimovo is available as a treatment option and accessible to appropriate patients suffering from osteoarthritis worldwide. Posen CFO Bill Hodges says global sales of Vimovo are increasing while domestic sales are stagnant. Plachecka doesn't want to end up in the same situation with Posen's new drug candidate, PA-32540, which is intended to prevent heart attacks without causing aspirin-induced ulcers. When Phase 3 data comes in at the end of March for PA-32540, Plachecka hopes to submit the drug to the FDA. The next step would be to line up a marketing partner by the end of the year so the medicine could be in physicians' hands in 2013. Posen Chief Commercial Officer Liv Zernak says the company is looking at all options, from one partner to multiple partners, and wants a company that embraces the Posen pricing strategy. Discussions have been held with local and global partner options, she says, adding that it's difficult to say how much Posen plans to invest and how much a partner would invest. We do expect that the partner will take the primary role in marketing PA32540, she says. Posen has enlisted Keelan Reed's Partners to help select the partner and by selling Trexamet royalty rights for $72 million. Posen has cash for bargaining, $113.9 million at the end of the year. Annual revenue included Trexamet royalty of $12.2 million and Vimovo royalty of $2.9 million, totaled $87 million in 2011 compared to $68.5 million in 2010. Posen employs 32 people at its headquarters in Chapel Hill. Its typical burn rate is between $30 million and $40 million a year, and it outsources much of its business. Move afoot to revise system for setting fuel taxes in North Carolina. This article is written by Chris Bagley with a Dateline of Raleigh. A plan to change the way North Carolina calculates its fuel tax could tamp down price fluctuations, says a legislator behind the effort. State Representative Mitch Gillespie, a Republican from Marion, says he and others want to do away with the variable component of the formula used to calculate the fuel tax. Under that formula, North Carolina taxes gasoline and diesel fuel at 17.5 cents a gallon plus 7% of the average wholesale price during a recent six-month period. The rate is adjusted each January and July. Gillespie last year was a chief proponent of a House bill that would have temporarily capped the state's total tax at 35 cents a gallon. That bill died upon reaching the Senate, and the tax rose to 38.9 cents on January 1 from 35 cents. Senate leader Phil Berger, an Eden Republican, says his chamber didn't act on the measure because doing so would have forced the North Carolina Department of Transportation to delay several road projects, triggering job losses. Berger pledged to revisit the issue in 2012, possibly with an unspecified cut. Gillespie says the goal is to separate the tax from semi-annual fluctuations in fuel prices to make them more predictable. He characterizes the idea as putting a cap on the per-gallon tax. Compared to many other states, North Carolina handles more road work at the state rather than at the local level. The fuel tax varies with wholesale prices because motor fuels and asphalt, a key component in road building, both tend to rise and fall with crude oil prices. NCDOT spokeswoman Greer Beatty says the agency frequently discusses tax and budget matters with legislators but could not comment specifically on Gillespie's plan. A more stable tax rate could help businesses with large fleets to budget their fuel expenses. While most of those expenses would continue to vary with world oil prices, the variable portion of the tax often accounts for 5 cents a gallon of the annual fluctuations. The state's 6.4 cent increase since the first half of 2011 has been its largest annual increase in state history, according to the North Carolina Department of Revenue. The diesel tax cuts both ways for Martin Marietta Materials Incorporated, a Raleigh company and the nation's second-largest producer of aggregates for road building. CFO Ann Lloyd says sustained increases in prices force the company to analyze and adjust the paths its trucks take to quarry sites. At the same time, the company depends on federal and state fuel taxes to fund road building, a core feeder of Martin Marietta sales. There's going to have to be increased funding for the state to fund the infrastructure it needs, she says. And for our remaining minutes, we'll read from the TriangleBusinessJournal.com. Here are some of the news you may have missed on TBJ's website. NCSU Athletics strikes $49 million deal with Capital Broadcasting, Learfield. North Carolina State University's Athletics Department has hashed out a new multimedia deal that will nearly double its rights revenue and should offer more corporate sponsorship opportunities for companies that want to promote their brand at Wolfpack events. Under the new deal, Raleigh's Capital Broadcasting Company, formed a joint venture with Learfield Sports and will guarantee NC State at least $49 million over the life of the 10-year contract. In return, the venture, called the Wolfpack Sports Properties, will develop corporate partnerships and manage the operations of the rights deal, including signage, event marketing, radio play-by-play, and coaches shows, television coaches shows, and official athletic website sponsorships. Bankruptcies flat in Durham and Orange counties. Bankruptcy activity was flat last month in Durham and Orange counties, according to data compiled by the U.S. Bankruptcy Court for the Middle District of North Carolina. A total of 65 debtors filed for bankruptcy in the two counties, compared to 66 in February 2011. Last month's total includes 47 initial petitions in Durham County and 18 in Orange. Two local businesses filed for Chapter 7 bankruptcy liquidation in the Durham branch of the court: ProTech Powder Coatings Incorporated and Miami Skateboarding and Clothing LLC. Carry firm laying off 232 people. Connection Technologies, a company founded by former Cary Mayor Glenn Lang, is laying off more than half of its 455 employees. The Cary-based company filed a worker adjustment and retraining notification notice with the state on Monday that said Connection was planning to cut 130 to 140 jobs in North Carolina. In an interview on Tuesday, Executive Vice President Matt Springer put the number at 106 in North Carolina and 126 in other states. NCSU's Centennial Campus lands Chinese company. China Ming Yang Wind Power Group Limited, a wind turbine manufacturer in China, opened a North American Research and Development Center on North Carolina State's Centennial Campus on Tuesday. The center will focus on offshore wind turbine research and development. And we'll stop right there, because we've run out of time for today's episode of Triangle Business Journal. Be sure to listen at the same time next week. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Derek Frost, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. The program is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast. Our phone number, 919-832-5138. So long until next time.